This is the Friends of History Debating Society. I'm John Batchelor, and I welcome Thaddeus McCotter, writing in American Greatness about the Cold War I and lessons learned for the adversaries in Cold War II. Thaddeus, a very good evening to you. As I recall the Cold War in the 20th century, the Soviet Union was not prosperous, and the People's Republic of China was very, very, very poor, to the point of starving to death tens of millions of its own people and having no industrial base whatsoever except perhaps a blacksmith in the backyard. They've learned from the mistakes. How so? Good evening to you.
Hi, good evening to you, John. Well, first, the premise is that we are currently engaged in a second Cold War due to the failures of the policy establishment, the corporations and others in the elite, quote-unquote, community over the last 30 years. What you're talking about makes perfect sense because when you think about the Soviet Union, it was a clear adversary. It was understood. It was a strategic threat and rival model of governance. We defeated them with a containment strategy and eventually a rollback strategy that carried through multiple administrations over a bipartisan basis, including a bipartisan consensus in Congress that we had to win. Today, we do not see that type of consensus. In fact, from Republicans and Democratic administrations, as well as the corporate community, China learned the lessons. They became, through the openness to foreign investment and to foreign business, they used their captive population as a means of enticing foreign capital, foreign investment, and eventually they learned how to compete with the West on a financial basis, much as the Soviets tried to do on an industrial basis, and which actually worked for a while. So today what we see are people denying that we are in the midst of a new Cold War, the tentpole axis, the authoritarian axis of communist China, Putin's Russia, Iran, Venezuela, Cuba, North Korea, and others that are acting in a loose concert, all with the same aim as the undermining of the United States and the West and free people.
How does it serve the Biden administration to continue to look for ways of trading with China, knowing its intellectual property theft, knowing its bullying, knowing its persecuted foreign guests in China, detaining them, knowing it uses what you'd have to say is RICO tactics around the world? How does it suit the Biden administration to continue to look for ways to be peaceful?
We both know, John, that, and it's been over time, that Wall Street is now the major donor to the Democratic Party. They no longer put Republicans first. The multinational corporations, a lot of the woke capital, they all have major investments in communist China. And so they want to see that train continue. The efforts to decouple from communist China, the efforts to free the Uyghurs from the concentration camps, all of this falls on deaf ears because of their greed. The Biden administration, much like Republican administrations before it, with the exception perhaps of the Trump administration, have all sought to somehow unleash a rain of riches upon the communist Chinese and hope that they were not going to continue their ways and would somehow become nice little Democrats with a small D. That has not been the case any more than it was with the Soviet Union through detente. You have to understand the nature of the adversary and the allies that the adversary has engaged with to basically put the free world on the defensive and contain us. And we're seeing this probably most notably, obviously, with the actions in Ukraine through Russia, with the actions of their proxies such as Hamas, Iran's proxy Hamas in Israel. But you also have to see it as well in the actions in Africa and Latin America of both Iran, Putin's Russia, Venezuela, Cuba, the Bolivares, as well as communist China in those areas. So the West had better wake up, better realize that the greed of the few does not outweigh the security of the many. And certainly the free nations are in, I would argue, in the same type of existential peril that we saw in the first Cold War.
It is striking that the administration, looking for ways of commerce with China, at the same time is looking for ways to avoid the facts in the Middle East about Iran as the driver of Hezbollah and Hamas and Islamic Jihad. Iran is the disturber of peace in the whole region, especially its neighborhood. How does it suit the Biden administration to continue to deny this, knowing that Iran is allied very closely with Russia and China?
Well, to quote the geopolitical strategist Lennon and McCartney, living is easy with eyes closed, misunderstanding all you see. It suits their purposes. It suits the agenda of Wall Street, suits the agenda of the multinational corporations, and suits the ideology that somehow the United States is the worst actor in the world and has to be fundamentally transformed. If you understand that the United States, Europe, and other free nations are not only the vanguard of freedom, but also the future of freedom, it becomes very difficult to consider the United States and democracies in general in Europe and elsewhere to be the bad guy. Unfortunately, that's what many of the left have argued for quite some time, for decades. But that's not the case. And what we need is a commitment to the recognition that while we're not perfect, we certainly, as free people, have not only the capacity to grow, but the ability to do so voluntarily, and that our system of governance is worth defending as it was during the first Cold War. It's going to be difficult, but I think it's entirely possible. And I think the public is far ahead of the policymakers on this, because the public, to be blunt, had no role in the mistakes that helped to lead the creation of the second Cold War.
The president acknowledges in his recent Oval Office speech that there are divisions in America. There's an understatement. The president has contributed to those divisions repeatedly through his term by making speeches addressing one part of the population as the enemy, the villain, the bad actor. Does the president want us to work together, or do divisions suit him?
Well, we had divisions during the first Cold War, too, but we understood the nature of the enemy we were against, and we were able to do two things at once. In America, we certainly do not want to use external threats as a means to have totalitarian or authoritarian governance here at home. So I think that we are able to continue our political discourse. The messy beauty of democracy can continue, as well as forging the consensus that the very nature of the government that allows us free people to have these types of conversations, have these political disputes, is worth perpetuating and worth preserving for future generations in the face of the authoritarian axis that we are confronted with. So I see no problem with it. We won the last Cold War, and I think that if we put our minds to it, we can win the next one. It may require some policymakers who've had a hand in creating these problems to leave the scene. But that's the nature of how things go. Eventually, the public is, again, well ahead of the politicians on this. If you think about it, you can see a poll that 72% of Americans think that subsidizing communist Chinese companies in the United States is absolutely abysmal. It's insane. That's 72%. That's Republicans, Democrats, and Independents, John. There's not a whole lot of issues where 72% of Americans agree on these days, but that's certainly one. And I think we can take that as a nice way to move forward, as a nice basis to move forward together.
Thaddeus McCotter writing in American Greatness. He represented Michigan's 11th Congressional District, 2003 to 2012, served as chair of the Republican House Policy Committee. This is the Friends of History Debating Society. I'm John Batchelor.